This Do Lectures episode features creative innovator in education, Kate Robinson, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2017.
Hi everyone. It's really lovely to be here. It is my first time in Wales, which is very exciting, and my first time at the Do Lecture, so I am incredibly excited. Thank you so much for having me. I am the co-director and the co-founder of a company called Nevergrey. Nevergrey is a consultancy, and we work with organizations and individuals who are driven by social purpose. We help elevate their platform and change how they interact with their audiences. We do a lot of work, as you just heard, in education. One of the organizations that I've worked with, particularly over the past 2 years, is an initiative called 100. Which was started in Finland and is taking an in-depth look at what the next 100 years of education should look like. So I spend a lot of my time thinking about and writing about and speaking about the future of education and emerging trends in education and what I hope the future of education will look like. But in the spirit of the Do Lectures, rather than do that for you today, what I thought I'd like to do is talk about why I care about it so much and tell you a bit of my story about how I got to be here. I'm going to preface it before I start and just say that it's full of privilege. It is a very privileged story that I have and I'm very grateful for, but I just want to say that so that you know that I know that it's very privileged. I really do think there are some key messages that can come out from it, which I hope are relatable regardless of me. So I'm going to start. I'm not going to tell you my whole life story, I promise, but I am going to start with the fact that I was born in Stratford-upon-Avon in the Midlands in England. There I am, in Stratford-upon-Avon in the Midlands in the 90s. And when I was 12, we moved to California, to the west side of LA. So there I am, less than 8 years later, fully adapted to life in Southern California. I get asked quite a bit if that was a difficult transition, if it was hard to go from the Midlands to California. It really wasn't. It was glorious. It was one of the happiest times of my life. So we moved to LA when I was 12, so just in time to start the seventh grade, which is year 8 over here. And I went to a properly American school. The first day that I went into assembly, they were playing Eminem on the speakers, and the students ran the assembly, and there were cheerleaders, and a varsity football team, and red cups at parties. It was like being in a movie. But it was a very prestigious school. It's very well known in LA. It's very well respected, primarily because the majority of its graduates go on to the top universities in America. They go off to all the Ivy League schools. Now, I'm not academic at all. I have never been academic. I am quite comfortable with the fact that I will never be academic. My skills and qualities lie elsewhere, in other equally important areas, I think. But at the time, it was really hard. It was really hard because the school was so competitive that kids would literally cry if they got 95% on a test. Like, actually cry, saying that they failed 5%, so how can they go home and tell their parents? And I never got 95% in anything at all. I don't think I ever have. I just didn't seem to care about any of it the way they did. And I couldn't make myself care. That's the thing. I kept trying. I kept reading and doing the work and then forgetting it or leaving it at home. I just couldn't make it work. It just didn't fit. And so over time, after failing a few tests, that was it. I kind of got put in a box and was labeled hopeless. And what happens when you put kids in a box and label them something is they live up to it. That's where they set their boundary at. And I did. I thought, that's it. I am academically hopeless. I probably won't go to an Ivy League school. I probably won't amount to anything. And it wasn't okay with me, I should say that. I was really down for a very long time about it. It sucked. It really sucked. And then when I was 16, I got really sick. I got glandular fever, which is called mononucleosis in America. I don't know if any of you ever had glandular fever. They call it the kissing disease. It's enough to put you off kissing for absolute life. It's horrible. And I was off school for 3 weeks, in bed, in various states of consciousness, just asleep pretty much for 3 weeks. And I started getting texts after the third week of people saying that if I didn't go back to school, I was going to fail the 11th grade, that I was I wouldn't take the SATs and I'd never go to college and my life would end and it would be over and what was I thinking? So I convinced my parents that I was fine. And I went straight back to school the next day or the next couple of days. I shouldn't have, I was still really sick. Within 5 minutes of being back at school, I got kicked out of my first class for not having read The Great Gatsby. I am never going to read The Great Gatsby as a result. I'm sure it is a wonderful book. I am never going to read it just on principle. I got kicked out. I can't remember if I knew that we had to read The Great Gatsby and just didn't because I was so sick or if I had no idea that it was assigned. I have no idea. Either way, I didn't read it. And I was asked to leave the classroom. So I did at 8:30 in the morning. I went to the bathroom. I burst into tears and I did what every independent, strong-willed teenager would do. I called my mum, who appeared literally 10 minutes later with my dad, like knights on shining armor. And they went into the principal's office. I have no idea what happened in the principal's office. All I know is that about half an hour later, they came out sort of shrouded in this golden light and said, get in the car, you're never coming back. And I never did go back, and it was amazing. So we spent a few weeks trying to figure out what to do after that, because it's one thing in the heat of the moment to go in and take your child out of school, but then what you do afterwards required some thought. So we looked at other schools in the area, and they were all either the exact same school but called something else somewhere else, or there were one or two that we did like, and they wouldn't take me on halfway through the school year. We met with home tutors, we looked at online courses, we did everything for several weeks. And after several weeks, I remember I was sitting in the garden, and my dad said to me, he said, your mother and I have talked about it, and if you were in England at 16, you could leave school. And it's not your fault that you're not in England, so we'll honor that. If you would like to leave school, then you can do it. We'll take you out. I don't know if I pretended to think about it for a minute, just out of politeness. I might have done like a 10-second soul search just for looks. But I was like, get me out. Option B, let's do that one. So we did. And that is the actual front page of the book that we created, called Kate's New Life, from when I was 16. And in it was a whole list of things that I couldn't do. And I think I have it here. Yeah, so those are things I couldn't do. I couldn't spend all day in bed. I couldn't spend all day watching TV, and I couldn't have a baby. Those were the three conditions under which I could leave school. And then there was another list of all the things I could do, which was incredible. It was things like community college and volunteer work and work experience and you name it. Anything else I could possibly think of to do, I could do. And I did all of it, absolutely all of it. I got, I did courses in jewelry design and sewing. I studied childhood psychology and early childhood development at a community college, which is amazing. I studied about the music business. My parents live right next to UCLA, so the University of California, Los Angeles. I went there to the extension courses. I got some amazing job experiences, work experience. I worked at a company that made all the music for commercials and for the Oscars. Somehow through the course I did on the music industry, I ended up working for Miley Cyrus for a little while. It was just incredible. I moved to New York and I spent a year as a teaching intern at the Blue School, which is founded by the Blue Man Group. It's a Reggio Emilia school, it's amazing. And my life began. I soaked up everything I could. I learned so much, all my lights came back on and I was happy and it was amazing. I can't explain it to you, it was amazing. Everything started from the moment that I left school. So that's my story that I came to tell. I'm going to pause and have a drink. But this is why I wanted to tell you it. I am not saying that schools are terrible, that all schools are terrible. I'm not saying that you should go home immediately and take your kids out of school and do them a favor. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that mass systems by design cannot cater for individuals. They're not designed to. They're designed to suit the masses. So with that in mind, I have two messages. My first message is a message to parents. In a million years, I would never try and tell you how to be a parent. I don't know you yet. I don't know your circumstances, your situation, your family dynamic. I wouldn't dream of telling you how to raise your children. What I would say to you, though, is this. What I would ask of you is this. Please don't trust the system more than you trust your own children. And with that, please don't trust the system more than you trust your own instincts as a parent. Because as I said, the system is designed for children, yes, but it's not designed for your child. Your child who you know who's got that particular laugh and their unique things that they're interested in and the things that make them excited and the things that makes them worried. They're not capable of it, and it's not because schools don't want to, a lot of them do, and it's not because teachers don't want to, the majority of them do. It's just that at this point in the evolution of school, it's not designed to, mass education isn't designed to. I have every hope that it will get to the point that it is. There are some amazing things already happening. As I said, the work with 100 I'm doing is identifying them that are bringing us closer to this point, but at this point it's not. So again, I'm not saying take your kid out of school at all. What I am saying though is just take a really good long hard look at them and ask them if they're happy. And really listen to them when they tell you, and they might not be able to tell you with their words, they might tell you in other ways, but you're their parents. Ask them and listen to them when they tell you, and if they are, then well done. If they're not, then help them. And there are so many ways in which you can help them. There are incredible innovations out there. I mean, there are programs and platforms that let you create relationships and dynamics with people who live on the other side of the world. There are sharing platforms where you can solve problems for people living in Africa, and you can talk to the kids and help them on the other end of the platform. There are a million and one things. I don't have time to go into an array of them, but I'm here all weekend, so please do come up and ask, and if I can help, then I will. So there are some amazing things that you can do to hack the system while you're still in it. And I know that as parents, you're tired, and I know that families look a million and one different ways at the minute, that the majority of people work multiple jobs, and that this is another thing to ask. And the beautiful thing about what I'm asking, though, is that you don't actually have to do that much. It's about empowering your children to know that they can do it for themselves. It's about creating the conditions under which they know it's okay to start challenging the status quo and to take control. For just tick the box and let them know that they can educate themselves on how they want to be educated. My parents gave me the best gift anyone can give anyone, which is empowerment. And it goes hand in hand with trust. They empowered me to be the best I could, and they trusted me that I would do it. And I did, and it's the best thing that ever could have happened. So that's it. Just create the conditions under which they can fly. Wind them up and watch them go. Another mixed metaphors. And then the second thing is for employers. If you're an employer and you're in a position to, create work opportunities for young people. And this part's really important. Create work experience and create internships and pay them for it. Because unpaid internships are really just a glamorous form of child exploitation to begin with. You would pay an adult to do the same stuff. And secondly, they really narrow the pool so that only a very small percentage of children or young people can apply for them, because no matter how old you are, only a very few amount of people can work for free. So create those opportunities, let them be there, and pay them for it. And take a chance on someone. Take a chance on a school leaver or someone who doesn't have straight A's, or at least give them the same consideration you would give the other candidates. Because it doesn't matter how bad someone might look on paper, inside they could be full of potential, and you could be the person that unlocks it, and you could open the doors, and you could be their break, you could help them fly. So do that, please, as if your employers create paid work experience opportunities. In our company, Nevergrey, we've just announced, we've been going for like 3 months, and we've just announced our first paid internship position for the summer, which we're really excited about. It'll benefit you as an organization, and it will change somebody's life. They will not let you down. And then the last audience, and I don't have a slide for it, but the last audience that I wanted to talk to you about it is, if you're none of those things, or you're all of those things, but you're also somebody who feels that you were failed by the system or you didn't get what you wanted from it, it is never too late to just fix that. There are all those things I talked about. I'm doing my degree right now online at the Open University just for the fun of it. The beautiful thing about the Open University is that they give you 16 years to do the degree, which is great. Because I didn't think I'd start a business in the middle of doing my degree, so I'm on pause. But I've got like 12 years left to do it, so I'm good. But there are amazing opportunities out there, and it is literally never too late to start doing them. There's a message that we as a culture send young people all too often, and it's that life begins after 18. And it's just not true. We know this as adults. You don't graduate, get a certificate, and then get a little box with the meaning of life in it. We're all still figuring it out. We know this. It took me well into my 20s to realise that not only do I not have everything figured out, I never will because nobody ever does. So A, it's a lie. It's not a true message that we're sending. But B, I think it's quite a dangerous message because young people are alive right now. They're not in a waiting room. They're not backstage waiting to go on when they turn 18. And it's a dangerous message to teach them otherwise. You know, at this point in humanity's evolution, we have no idea what the world is going to look like. I imagine we never did know what the world was going to look like, but it's changing so quickly at the moment that we really have no idea. But what's beautiful about the moment is we're all shaping it. We're all putting our own stamp on it and figuring it out. And it's about time we started inviting young people into that conversation and let them take control of what the future will look like as well, and what the world looks like at the moment. Because you hear a lot that children are the future, and they are. Undoubtedly, they're the future, but they're also the present. They're our present. And it's time we started empowering them through education and outside of it. Thank you.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or, if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out. For our weekly curation of wonder and optimism, sign up to our newsletter by visiting thedolectures.com/newsletter.